Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 94 and a half. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee is with me. We are in Phoenix. Well, I lied. We're in Mesa, Arizona, on the outskirts of Phoenix, where UFC Fight Night 103 Rodriguez versus Penn is in the books. We're cracking open a few frosty beverages at the end of a hard night of Sunday night fights. We won't even bother talking about the football that happened earlier today. My Dallas Cowboys, ouch. Ouch, ouch, painful. All right, main event. Cold coffee, Yair Rodriguez put an absolute beating on BJ Penn. I don't mean to be disrespectful or dramatic or anything like that towards BJ Penn, but it was pretty one-sided. I don't know how you can call that much other than a beatdown.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were moments, I think, when it first started where it was like, okay, BJ's there. You know, he's going to show us little glimpses or something. You know, I just... His movement seemed good, but I think it was just after the first couple leg kicks that he was blocking. And then I think that opening spinning back kick that he kind of opened up with, and BJ kind of, you know, stunted a little bit and kind of drove in there. I was like, okay, he's ready for it, you know. But it just he just never stopped with those leg kicks. And I think immediately you could just start seeing it, like BJ's like, I wasn't really counting for this, you know. I mean, it's one thing if Yair was going to go in there, and I think if they were just going to be trading hands, I think BJ, that's what he was prepared for. I mean, how do you prepare for legs coming every single direction, because you can't get in on them,
right?
You know, and yeah, after he started landing a few of them, but man, BJ, his heart, man, you can't say anything about the dude's chin. He took multiple shots to the head and just kept standing.
Just landed flush.
Yeah.
And just kept walking. I mean, he staggered a couple of times.
Yeah.
But just kept moving forward, you know. So let's just start with the whole experience. First of all, man, BJ Penn, of course, had to walk in first. Definitely got the pay-per-view main event treatment for the walk-in. I mean, they showed him, you know, way back in the back. You know, they had the lights down, and that iconic song comes on. You know, the traditional Hawaiian music comes on there, and it's like, wow, man. And BJ Penn comes walking in, and I can tell you, man, that arena, it felt strong, man. It really did feel like BJ Penn was back. And I will say this. He had the Hawaiian flag upside down. I saw some people worrying a little bit, like, what the hell's the flag upside down? And I'm not going to lie, I did the same thing, because here's a funny story. I was basically, as they were standing in the corner, because I saw it walking out, and I'm like, well, that's weird.
And then look right.
And then they got up to the cage, and they put the flag down. It was still upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And then Yair Rodriguez starts his walk-in. So while Yair Rodriguez is walking in, I was busy trying to get Jason Perillo and Greg Jackson's attention. I was like, hey! The flag's upside, and I pulled up a picture of the Hawaiian flag on my computer, and I turned it, because obviously they can't hear me, it's too loud, and I turned it so they could see the picture of the Hawaiian flag, and I like pointed to the flag, and because I finally got Jason Perillo's attention, and he kind of turned, and Greg Jackson kind of turned with him, and I was like pointing at the flag, and they were like, what? And I'm like, it's up, you need to turn, and I'm doing hand signals, which is great for a radio podcast, or an audio podcast, but I was telling them to turn the flag around, and they were like, No. Like, he wants it that way. And come to find out, it was a protest of Hawaiian
quiet protest.
Solitary.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a different movement over there. I guess they're unhappy with the way the state's being run or whatever. And but yeah, I think probably I'd have to go online to look to listen more.
Yes,
but
I will not pretend to know a lot about
so
it.
I
just wanted to put that out there because it was
everybody noticed it.
Everybody noticed
we
it.
We noticed it. We were saying the same thing in the back. We're like, that doesn't look right. You know, I'll be the first to say, you know, I can't, you know, go to every state flag and be like, this looks like whatever.
But you've never really seen a corner or patch
the
on bottom the
bottom right corner. You're like, something doesn't look
that
right.
Doesn't look right. So just wanted to throw that out there. And it was kind of a funny moment because they were like, no, he wants it. So I was like, okay, I guess it's some kind of protest. And then, you know, I was like, well, I was looking out for you. And they were both like, God, thank you. I didn't want you guys to look stupid. So anyway, fight starts. And as you said, you know, BJ was looking good. You know, I mean, as good as he could. I mean, way better than last time. Let's just say that. It was not the weird tippy-toe stuff that he was doing, the upright fighting that he did against Frankie Edgar last time. And it looked like he was at least, you know, at least moving well and as well prepared as we thought he was. I mean, he looked physically good all week. Mm-hmm. He seemed mentally focused, and it seemed that way. Yair came out doing what Yair does. Now, you know, BJ Penn did kind of catch that one spinning back kick and pushed him against the cage, and I was like, okay, like, that's what his plan is. We're going to have ourselves a little bit of a fight. And then it just kind of fell apart from there. It all went downhill. Yair Rodriguez, the kicks were landing, as you said, kind of really. It would be interesting to see what the kick versus punch count was. I don't know if that's tracked anywhere.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as you said, it didn't even really. And he always, Yair always uses those kicks, of course, because they're very dynamic. But I think he was having such success with it that he's like, I'm not going to punch at all. And BJ really couldn't counter.
Yeah, I think his volume was just sick. I don't think we've ever seen it like that. And it got to a point where it was like we were watching, like when he was doing like the open workout, just the quick repetition over and over and over. It's like he was working a body bag. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the body was BJ Penn's body, you know. But yeah, he looked sharp. I don't think I've ever seen him quite throw like that, because normally he's forced, I think, to go to his hands a little bit more, maybe if another guy starts throwing his own kicks back, and BJ wasn't really doing that. You know, I think he was kind of, I don't know, it seemed to me after a while, after a few of the kicks, he started going back into his head, and then you were seeing less movement, and I couldn't tell if that was just because of the damage that was starting to happen, or he was like, what the hell am I doing back here? I don't remember it like this, you know.
He got flat-footed really quick.
Really, really quick.
And I think that was definitely the beginning of it, of the end as well. You know, you could see it kind of unfolding. Because, you know, if you look back at that open workout footage, I know you posted a lot of it online, and we actually, you know, streamed it on Facebook Live, which we've been trying to do a little bit more of. But, I mean, I was impressed with how light on his feet BJ Penn was at that workout, you know, really moving around. And I was like, okay, it looks like he's almost going to kind of match Yair Rodriguez's creative style, his flow, you know. But once he got tagged a couple times, he got kind of flat-footed, and at that point he was just a sitting duck. As you said, credit to the heart, man. He took some big shots from Yair Rodriguez, and you know, I didn't necessarily think Yair was going to tire out, but you did have to wonder if he was starting to get a little bit frustrated by because he was, I mean, literally just teeing off with everything he could in the first round, and just couldn't seem to really hurt BJ Penn.
Yeah, and looking at the, you know, I love the little stat stuff that they've added to the UFC site, but according to them, Yair's targeting 76% was towards the head, 16% on the body, 7% on the leg, and that's what we saw.
Yeah.
I mean, he was headhunting because he was making contact and he was doing damage, and then at one point I was like, wow, he wants to end this with a head kick knockout. I mean, it was just seemed like that way, and for a while there I thought he was going to get it because he landed a couple good ones, really, really flush. But, yeah, man, sharp. I think that was the best performance we've seen from Yair.
It was. Those high kicks were so fast. You're right. They were landing because, you know, a lot of times, man, in fights, it's, you know, people throw high kicks and they end up getting blocked. You know, they make a loud sound because they hit the gloves and they look flashy and the crowd goes, wow, but they don't do anything. These were landing, man. They were landing over and over. It's like, I don't know if BJ just couldn't see them or he just couldn't react because they were so fast.
Very fast.
God, they were impressive. And then, of course, you know, BJ was hurt pretty bad and then you know, wobbled a couple times, staggered around, but showed a lot of heart. Then he goes out in the second round. And it's funny because with all those big high kicks, you know, it was a right hand that put him on the ground. And then Yair jumped on top and just unleashed a nonstop barrage of strikes. And, you know, I saw some people kind of get a little upset with John McCarthy that he didn't stop the fight sooner. But I don't know. It's BJ Penn,
yeah,
a legend of the sport. He was moving. He wasn't necessarily blocking. I mean, he was getting tagged by a lot of those, but it wasn't like he was flat. I mean, he was trying to move and recover.
Yeah.
And, I think it's okay that John McCarthy gave him a little bit extra rope. You know,
sure.
This is the legend, BJ Penn. The last thing you want to do is have him come in and not be sure that he, you know, he wasn't shortchanged.
Yeah. And, I mean, besides even he was moving side to side. He had his hands up. Granted, the hands at one point weren't really doing a lot. But he did that whole move where he sort of spun and did a complete 360 on the ground while he was sort of defending that. So they gave him the time for that. So, I mean, like, if he's doing that, he's actively trying to defend himself. You know, after he kind of did that little spin and when he came on, there was a point where he took some more shots to the head, and then eventually the hands were doing sort of that searching thing.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, he wasn't intelligently defending himself, and I think he had finally seen enough. But, no, I wasn't too upset about him. And if anything else, I think it was probably in the back of his head, too. I mean, it's the main event. You want to let it go. You want to give it a chance. Is this BJ's last chance as well? You want to give him every effort. And even though while he was wobbly. I feel like fucking Goldberg right there. I can't say prodigy. But it was just the fact that, I mean, he got up, he was wobbly, but his eyes were there, and I think he was upset because I think in his mind he probably felt like he was better actively defending himself. But, I mean, it was justified. I mean,
no question.
Maybe a hair sooner he could have, you know, stopped it. But I think with all things considered, that he was still sort of moving. He never went flat. I mean, his hands were still up in the air. But I think once his head stopped moving and he wasn't really doing it, I mean, I think he stopped it at the right point. So I'm not upset about the stoppage.
So, you know, going in, I think we all thought BJ Penn was Yair Rodriguez was going to win this fight. I mean, we kind of knew what to expect. Now, this week, BJ Penn did, like I said, he put the sail on us, man. He seemed like he was right physically, mentally. Everything seemed like it was right. And it still kind of went the way we thought it would go. And the only thing I think I'll say about that is, I guess I kind of feel good that at least I know BJ Penn coming into this looked physically and mentally right.
Yeah.
And I hope that this proves to him that this is it. This is it. There's no need to come back. I will say this, I still don't understand the matchmaking. I don't understand this fight. I never did understand this fight, unless it's, you know, just that you're trying to give Yair Rodriguez an opportunity to move up in people's eyes and help build a star.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of understand that, but I don't know that you should do it at the expense of a legend like BJ Penn. But so I still don't necessarily understand the matchmaking, but I will say this. I hope BJ himself can feel good, because that comeback fight against Frankie Edgar, that thing was so bad. And this result wasn't great, but I feel like BJ put mentally and physically everything he could into it and did himself justice. At least he can look in the mirror and go, you know, I did what I could do. Whereas in that Frankie Edgar fight, I think that had to leave a bad taste in his mouth, that like he was fighting weird, he wasn't being him. And I don't know. We didn't get a chance to talk to BJ Penn tonight. He didn't. He didn't come to the post fight press conference, which is fine. We didn't actually have a press conference, but he didn't do the post fight media interviews. And I'm okay with that. I mean, he took some pretty bad shots. And what was he going to say? I mean, he was going to be emotional. We saw him cry last time. We don't need to see that. It's funny because a lot of times in the main event of fights, I'll do a little video recording of the winner and the loser as they walk by press row, just to kind of get that instant reaction feel. And I didn't even pull my phone out for BJ Penn walking by. I was like, you know what, man? Here's a guy that is a UFC Hall of Famer, that is a pioneer of the sport, and he kind of went out and, you know, let's just, you know, give him his privacy and his respect, I guess. And,
yeah.
But I hope that at the end of the day he'll realize, man, listen, there's these young animals in there, man. These young guys, these guys that watched me growing up, and they wanted to be like me, and now here they are, you know, 14 years younger, and they're just bigger, faster, more advanced, more developed, and as wonderful as BJ Penn is, I just don't think he can match up with those type of people anymore.
Yeah, I agree, and you know, it's tough, but, you know, I'm looking at the stats now, and you know, numbers always kind of change your perception, because when you think about it in your head, you're like, oh, it can't be as many or whatever. Mm-hmm. How many strikes? I mean, now, all right, now it pretty much was the first kick and maybe that follow-up strike that dropped him right from the get-go, right?
Right.
How many strikes do you think happened in the second round, or at least are credited to Yair?
In the second round?
In the second round, when they finished it. Or when it was all said and done.
25?
Close. It's actually more so. It was 18.
18?
18
okay.
shots.
Okay.
So the first two right off the bat, that was the
That's
kick and like the one that dropped him.
That's
what
landed?
It showed. Yeah. He threw. Okay. He tried to throw 38 is what he's credited
as. Okay, see, I was asking. I actually
Oh, you were trying to think total.
I thought he threw 25, so
okay.
He threw 38.
He threw 38
Jesus
shots.
Jesus Christ, so he even threw more than I thought.
Yeah, so when I start feeling this, like 18 make contact and 30, and absolutely BJ had nothing. So then when you start seeing numbers like that, then you're like, okay, more shots maybe were thrown than what I perceived to be thrown. That's how quick they were coming.
Yes, they
then
were.
Then you start thinking like, fuck, all right, maybe it didn't need to be that many.
So he threw 38 strikes in 24 seconds.
Yeah. So, you know, Grant, and the first two landed solid. So when you start hearing that, I mean, then it makes you think, all right, did he need to have that much? But when you're watching and perceiving it, it doesn't – stats don't take into account
was,
the fact that he was spinning. He was moving. He was
It was
trying.
Bordering on uncomfortable for me, man. It was bordering on uncomfortable for me. But I guess I just feel like in certain instances you give a guy more rope. You know what I mean? Maybe that's not right. I mean, I can think that some people would say, no, it doesn't matter the situation. It's the letter of the law. But I think sometimes when you know the guy, you know the stakes, you know the fact that it may be his last fight, like, you give him as much leash as you possibly can.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
But you're right. It was numbers don't lie. That's a hell of
yeah,
a lot
it's
of
crazy.
Strikes.
Yeah, and it just like just seeing that, it was just like, wow, makes you sit back and think about it a little bit. But all right, but whatever. But it was crazy fight, great fight.
It was the other thing too that that we saw tonight, Yair Rodriguez. Man, I have seen it happening, and I am impressed. This man is he has a fan base, a
yeah.
strong fan base, and they're passionate. And they're amazing. It's cool when a country gets behind somebody. And of course, you know, not everybody flew from Mexico. You know, he did tell a story of that. You know, a couple hundred people coming from his hometown just by
That's
car
cool.
and driving. But of course, we know that you know, there's a ton of Mexicans or people of Mexican descent that live in the United States. Obviously, you know, my wife, my son would have that connection as well. So. You know, there's a lot of people that can identify with it, but I think it's so awesome when a country gets behind somebody and you
yeah.
see the flags and the
yeah.
chants. You know, it's I mean, obviously the Irish have done it better than anybody with Conor McGregor just filling arenas or whatever. But you know, we saw it in Salt Lake City, we saw it here. Man, a big contingent of Mexican fans, and Yair, 24 years old. Well spoken in English
yeah.
and Spanish, says the right things, very respectful. You know, even though there was it wasn't a grudge match, but there was a little bit of back and forth between those two guys
mm-hmm.
this week. Yair went right over to BJ, told him he was a legend. You know, so I'm not mad at you.
Yeah,
man, just the guy does everything right, man. He,
yeah.
To me, he ticks all the boxes, man. His fighting style is fun.
Yep,
he's getting better.
Yep.
He's young. He speaks two languages. I mean, he's respectful. I mean, this guy, to me, is a future star.
I agree. And I think the Mexican fan base, I mean, I don't want to say they've been let down by some of the guys they have, but I know a lot of people were jumping on. They were trying to jump on Velasquez, and I think that ship's kind of sailed to a degree. You know, I think they're looking for somebody. You know, I think
– Well, Cain's career stumbled a little bit with the injuries
yeah.
and stuff. And, you know, his Spanish – not that – I don't want to fault him because I know that he's taken lessons and he's worked on it and all
yeah.
that stuff, but he doesn't speak Spanish that well. And,
yeah.
and so because of that, I think they struggled to identify a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, you're right. This kid, he's just a good kid. You know, I mean, like, I haven't seen him do anything during the fight week that would be like, he's kind of a douche or he's kind of whatever. I mean,
Class.
He seems like the right kind of guy that you want to kind of carry the banner from for your country. And we're seeing that in a lot of the younger guys. I think a lot of the younger guys are kind of jumping on that. And, you know, and I think maybe it's a credit to the fact of what Connor's been able to show. When you can get a country behind you, you know, they obviously love the sport. And if you're able to somehow pin that country's flag on your back and carry it, like, the sky is the limit, you know. So, and there's a huge Mexican fan base. And, I mean, the fact that it's not that far from Vegas either – you know, I think we could see a lot of people starting to make that transition over some of these big fights. So good on him. And when he has performances like that, I mean, with a performance like that, I mean, that was probably some of the best striking in terms, especially of kicking. But even his punching was crisp and, you know, very, very sharp. That's probably one of the best performances we've seen out of anybody recently.
100%. You know, I'll be interested to see, Gorgeous George Garcia kind of handles our rankings at MMA Junkie, and then we all kind of chime in, and we're like, no, let's move him here, let's move him here. Yair Rodriguez was an honorable mention coming into this week, so just outside the top 15. Now, I know BJ Penn isn't a ranked opponent, but BJ Penn is a legend. This was a one-sided destruction of a legend. I'll be interested to see where he goes, because I think there's some intriguing matchups in the featherweight division. I mean, we know what we got going on at the top there. You got Aldo, you got Holloway, you got Frankie Edgar. Cub Swanson is certainly kind of up there in the mix now. I mean, you got those kind of top guys.
Him and Frankie would be fun.
Oh, that would be a great fight, man. It'd be a lot of fun. But, I mean, even guys like Duho Choi is there. Brian Ortega is there. Jeremy Stevens is a name that's there. Charles Oliveira. Man, there's just a lot of interesting matchups. So I'm going to be intrigued to see by kind of where he ends in our rankings and then also what the UFC matchmakers decide to do with him next. He won't call anybody out no matter how much you ask him to. He doesn't call anybody out. It's not his thing. He is just respectful as can be. And he stopped by the press room. We didn't have a press conference tonight, so if you were looking for that, that's why you didn't see one anywhere, because there wasn't one. This was just kind of a little bit smaller fight night show. Just FYI, it cost the UFC quite a bit of money to stream. I think I've heard as much as like $20,000 to get all the equipment in place that they need to stream a press conference and all those things.
I call BS.
Yeah? You think so?
They lying.
Okay.
Maybe at one point it did.
All right.
Now, well, but whatever. It's but the, I mean the streaming boxes and shit that they plug in the back doesn't cost that much, but whatever.
Well, that, maybe including all the rigging and the stage, because you got a stage, you got to pay somebody to set it up and put it down.
Yeah, 20,000 seems pretty high, but who knows?
It does seem like a lot.
Who knows? But whatever.
All right. Well, it costs
we can
at least
do it for cheaper.
It costs at least 50. I was about to say we'll stream everything for like 15,000.
Like 15, maybe 10 grand and a bunch of beer.
Oh man. So anyway, some of these smaller Fight Night events, you're not going to see it, and that's what you're just going to get these scrum style interviews, and that's what we did. And Yair Rodriguez stopped by and talked to us. He was happy. He was in a good mood. And here's what he had to say.
Yair, obviously this was a huge win for you. Just talk about the emotion, how it feels to perform like you did tonight.
You know, guys, it's something that it was in my head already. Like I told you guys, this is just part of the game. This is just part of the strategy that I was, you know, thinking on my head. You know, you put your toes in your mind. I don't see this fight going too far. I was ready to die or to win tonight, and thanks God I win against a legend, DJ Penn. I talked to him after the fight, and he say, "Hey, man, no disrespect. This is part of the game. I usually that I say all the stuff because you know part of the strategy, but not the respect." I told them, "Hey, man, I know it's part of the strategy. You know, we all do the same thing in different ways. So I'm not mad of you. He's not mad of me. I respect him even more right now. You know, now that I fight him, I know what he's like. You know, he's a powerful guy, and you know I'm pretty happy to have the victory tonight."
Your kicks are always a big part of your game, but tonight they seemed like they were really effective. Did you know that was going to be your main weapon going in, or did you just kind of feel it out as it was going along?
I was trying to feel it out, you know, because I knew he probably can catch me when I throw some kick with a big punch, you know. So I was trying to be careful, feel him out, you know, read him, read his movements. You know, you put something in your mind, you know, but sometimes it doesn't go the way that you want, so you have to be careful, you know, start reading him, his movements, and start your strategy from there. So my coach told me, be careful. You know, I know you touch him a little bit, but be careful. Don't pressure him too much. Don't go for him because, you know, he's a legend. He knows what he's doing, and he can take advantage of that. So just be careful, respect him a little, and then he's going to be there. Just believe in your kicks, and then it's what I did. You know, I believe in my kicks. I knew my kicks are pretty hard, you know. I knew it, and whenever he covered the kicks, it will be true. So I just start kicking him hard, you know, going up and down to the stomach, and I start seeing him going backwards, and I take advantage of that.
There was a lot of mystery around BJ coming into this. I feel like nobody really knew what we were expecting from him. Was there anything that in there that surprised you once you got in there with him?
Not really, you know. You know, his power, of course. He got me with some good right hands, you know, the left side of my head. But I was ready for that, you know. I was ready for everything. You know, his mental game is good, you know. But I was ready for everything, you know. I know this, everything that they want to bring to me, you know. I know it's part of the game, so it doesn't gonna affect me anymore. I know this is just, you know, part of the game, like we call it. So it doesn't matter whatever they wanna say to me. I ain't never gonna put it on my mind. They don't wanna go through this, you know. My mind, I know my mind is strong, you know. Like I'm telling you, BJ Penn bring a strategy, I bring mine, you know, and then things that I have the winning tonight.
Do you feel like it should have been stopped earlier?
I don't think so, you know, unless with a guy like BJ, he's a legend, you know. When I started punching him in the ground, he was moving. I saw him moving, you know, so I was actually being careful of him. Don't high kick me or grab me with a submission, you know, and I move and I start hitting him again. And whenever I see the referee stopping the fight, it was just an amazing moment, you know. But I don't think they should have stopped the fight before.
I know you said a couple times going in that you know it's just another guy, you know. You know his credentials, but it's just another fighter in front of you. Was there a moment when you stepped in there like, oh, that's BJ Penn, or you never had that?
I never had that in my mind. You know, I'll respect every opponent as a human being. You know, it doesn't matter who is in front of me. It can be Muhammad Ali, I don't care, you know. I will respect him the same way I respect you, and I respect everyone here. You know, I'm not fighting a god, you know. If I will fight in God, I will be like on my knees. But no, he's a human being. I respect him the same way I respect you, all of you, and all of the people.
have you put into perspective yet what this performance means? You know, big stage, big opponent, big name, and the way that you fought. Like, what does that mean for your career going forward?
For me, personal, it means a lot, you know, being a legend like BJ Penn. But I don't know where this fight is going to put me, you know. I just want to wait and see what the UFC wants to bring next, you know. Like I told you guys, I'm not the kind of fighter that I'm going to ask for a guy next. I'm just not that kind of guy. I'm different, you know, different kind of animal, like I told you guys. So whatever the UFC wants to bring next, I'll be ready for it. You know, I'll always prepare myself to fight the best in the world. So whatever they want to bring next, I'll be ready.
I know you don't want to call out anybody or say a name, but just in after a performance like this, do you feel like you should be fighting, you know, the top 5 guys in the world, top 8 guys in the world?
I don't really care. Whatever the UFC wants to bring, I'll be ready for it.
Yeah. How does it feel to fight here in Arizona, with a state with a large Latino population?
It feels pretty good. You see, like, all the people was like, I think it was like kind of like half and half, and then at the end it was like going to my side a little. I feel it, you know. You can feel that energy, you know. I try to enjoy this moment more than other fights. I was looking around, I was feeling the people, I was feeling the energy, you know. You gotta enjoy it, bro. You gotta enjoy it, you gotta feel it, you gotta let your body feel that energy, you know, that it comes through the people to you. And, you know, give that to the people too. You cannot just be in there afraid. You know, you gotta go there and perform, you gotta go there and feel, you gotta go there and show the people who you are, you know, and then the people is gonna hug you, like, just like they did, and, you know, every time since the beginning, they have done.
Those fans that you went in, were those fans, or did you know them?
Well, like, from my hometown, they drive, like, 30 cars, like, it's like my friend, Ramon, who was in my car, and he say he knew 250 or 270 guys that had come from my hometown, and just driving in cars. So plus the people that is flying, plus the people that is, you know, we're built because of the border, plus Hispanic people here. So it was like a lot of Hispanic people. Of course, a lot of friends come this time, you know, sometimes they cannot go farther, or, you know, it's a lot of, you know, expensive, especially with the market, you know, on my wonderful Mexico right now, you know, and the gasoline and stuff going up, and the dollar. You know, but, you know, I really appreciate all the people that is doing, you know, the best for coming here tonight. And, you know, I feel like I can be that guy that they look up to, you know. I want to give them hope, you know, then we can get better, you know. We can get better.
I mean, you were in there. You felt his strength and his speed and everything. Do you feel like BJ should come back, or do you feel like this should be the end for BJ?
Hey, I don't know, man. I cannot say that, bro. I cannot be the one picking that up. You know, it's part of his life and his career. It's up to what he wants to do, you know. I feel him strong. I feel him strong, you know, but it's up to him. It's up to him what he wants to do next.
Yair Rodriguez victorious in the main event of UFC Fight Night 103. Just impressive performance. Can't say enough about it. Even if we were expecting it, which I think a lot of us were when they first announced this fight, the way he got it done was impressive, and I think that's probably the last time we'll see BJ Penn. But you know what? I don't know. I think at least I feel better about it than I did had the Edgar fight been his last fight. I know that may sound weird because it was a pretty one-sided fight, but I feel like he went in there and tried to be BJ Penn, and it just didn't work out, and I feel better about it. All right, co-main event. Joe Lauzon picked up a win over Marcin Held. Listen, that's what the judges said. I didn't score it that way. Joe Lauzon didn't score it that way. Kind of a crazy fight, man. Joe came out in the opening round, looked very good, tagged Marcin with a couple of big elbows, and had him hurt pretty bad. And as Joe was in top position, I think he made a little bit of a critical mistake in turning and going for an armbar. And I think maybe, you know, the idea of, we were all kind of like, I mean, heck, Cole Coffey, we even told him earlier in the week, you know, I hope this turns into a jiu-jitsu fight, because it sure would be fun to see you and Held on the ground in a jiu-jitsu battle. And it did kind of make me think that, like, man, he had him in trouble with strikes, but maybe he was too tempted to go in there and potentially get the submission finish against the submission master, and you know, that ended up being a little bit of a mistake. But, you know, still a clear first round, I thought, for Joe Lauzon. second and third rounds, I thought, to be honest with you, were pretty clear rounds for Held. His striking was working very well. His jab looked really nice. I mean, he's definitely improved in the striking department. I think as good as his grappling is, you know, I think his striking is getting better. And I thought he won those two rounds. And for whatever reason, the judges decided that Joe Lauzon won rounds one and two, or at least I should say two of the three judges did. Martin Held did get a 30-27 score. So despite winning all three rounds on one judge's scorecard, he still loses the split decision. And Held was absolutely bewildered. It was funny because I was kind of just watching, you know, his camp, because I thought he won the fight. It seemed pretty obvious to me. So I was kind of watching his camp and his team and the way they were acting. And I think it's his girlfriend that has been with him all fight week, you know. And she had, like, the phone on the little selfie stick, and she's videoing the whole thing. And, you know, everybody's got smiles on their face. And then all of a sudden the scores are announced, and it's Joe Lauzon. But credit to Joe Lauzon. I mean, honestly, to me, you cannot say enough about a guy who gets on the mic and says, I don't agree with that decision. I thought I lost. I mean, Cole Kaif, I know that you guys honestly didn't get to see this fight because you guys were interviewing Ben Saunders for an extended period of time for the entire time this fight was on. And we'll talk about Ben Saunders in just a second. But I know you didn't get to see the fight, but you certainly got to talk to him afterwards. And I know you and I kind of chatted on instant message and that sort of thing about what had happened. But, man, classy move from Joe. That, I mean, to me, you just can't say enough about a guy that has the honesty to get up there and just respectfully say, I don't think I won the fight.
Yeah, he's always been so good at breaking down fights, whether it be his own fights, his past faults, you know, his opponents. So I knew he wasn't going to take it easy on himself, and he really, really didn't, you know. And he was very honest about it, and, you know, and what kind of felt bad because, you know, here's a guy that won, you know. One, I'm putting air quotes up for people that can't see what
always
I'm doing.
Always great on an audio podcast. Yeah.
Because, you know, he got the W. Now he can move forward. You know, most guys would try to plan, all right, what's next? You know, where does this take me? But you could tell that he felt really, really bad. And he said he went straight over to Martin and was talking to him, you know, and wanted to make sure that Shelby wasn't going to release him and do all the right kind of things because he felt bad. And he realized that he messed up, thought he gave him the second and the third. But to hear him not take the low road and say, you know, well, hey, you know, I thought I did enough, you know, the judges went my way, whatever, you know, he owned up to the fact that it wasn't his best performance, thought that Held got the win, and for him to be so brutally honest, and he wasn't, you know, he wasn't pouting about it and trying to make a martyr of himself, like, oh, you know, I feel so bad, you know, this, I mean, he was saying he was feeling too bad, but it was genuine. He wasn't throwing it out there just to, you know, try to, you know, allay some of the blame or whatever. And it's something about him that about that brutal honesty and being willing that, you know, we could have really went a certain route. I mean, if he probably was up there, you know, trying to say that the judges got it right and the fans are wrong, you know, he probably could have. It could have became a very standoffish thing.
Sure.
But the fact that he actually came out, said that, you know, I'm upset at my performance. I don't know where this puts me right now because, you know, normally with a win, you want to kind of focus on the future and all this other stuff. And he feels that momentum pretty much right now is kind of, he's kind of lost that momentum because with a win like this, it's not a win you could be proud of, you know. And for him to still sort of say that, you know, I have the most respect for him because, one, I mean, he doesn't pull punches, and especially on himself, when it really, really matters. And I think it's the kind of thing that, you know, he's gonna look back at what he did. He's going to find the little areas where he messed up, and he's the kind of guy that always regroups stronger. So I feel like he's treating this as a loss to him, and he's going to go back and look at the areas that he needs to improve. So I think we'll see another Joe Lauzon that's really, really good. But just the brutal honesty of what you'll hear in the soundbite is kind of nice because, you know, one, I was trying to stall. Hopefully you guys would get back there because I knew that everybody wanted to talk to him. And we had reached out to the UFC, and no offense to them. I mean, they tried to, you know, they tried to hold him, and they were even like, we told you we'd hold him till after main event. They literally brought him back right after.
Apparently, he said, he was like, can I go do it now?
Yeah, so he sort of asked for it. So I can't blame them on it. But I knew everybody wanted to talk to him about it. So hopefully the interview that you hear was decent enough with us few videographers that were stuck back in the back, kind of holding the fort down, you know, the few, the proud, the not so good. a better way to just toss it off to Joe, and well, you guys can hear it from him and make your own decisions. But I think what Joe, in his honesty, he shouldn't take the blame for this. This isn't anything that Joe did wrong when it came to the decision. And hopefully most of the fans and people watch it that realize, you know, the decision that took place out there, that's not Joe's fault. And if anything else, Joe owned up to the fact that it wasn't his best performance. He thinks Marcin won. And I don't know. We didn't really ask him if he wanted to run it back because I think it was really, really close. He probably doesn't immediately want to go back into it, but he's the kind of guy that I think he would. But take a listen and see what you think about how Joe handled the, I'm air quoting, win.
Joe?
Yep.
Joe, talk to us about the fight. Was Marcin kind of what you thought he was going to be? I mean, you know, he's got dangerous leg locks.
He's a lot better than I expected, honestly. You know, I came in the fight thinking, you know, he's got really good foot locks, goes for a lot of foot locks. I felt like he took a lot of damage going for them. So I thought that, you know, if he goes for foot locks, we're going to defend, we're going to get on top, we're going to punch. I knew that he had pretty good takedowns, but I thought we were going to out-wrestle him. But he just timed me well a few times. His base and position on top was awesome. You know, I'm used to going with, like, really good jiu-jitsu guys. I'm used to being able to sweep them, move them around a little bit, get back to my feet, you know, pretty much do what I want to do. But he was solid. He had, like, a really good base. Striking was about what we thought it would be. You know, I landed some good shots on him. He hit me a couple times, but nothing bad. He struggled for a takedown in the first round. I hit him with a bunch of elbows, and I thought the fight was over. I thought, you know, I was talking to him after. I think I flash KO'd him, you know, and then I hipped in on him, but he woke up, you know, and did a great job. He survived. But I thought, you know, I blew my load a little bit going for the first one, going for the elbows in the first. But it's the way it goes, you know. You know, I thought he had the second and third. Second round, I think, was pretty close. But, you know, as the fight happened, you know, we're thinking, okay, we never give ourselves benefit of the doubt. We always think, okay, if it's close, it's his round. So maybe the judges, I know there's new scoring criteria, so maybe they looked at it as, you know, his positional control wasn't as important as the strikes I landed. But I don't know. I thought he won the fight.
Does that kind of damper things a little bit? I know you want to take the win, but I know there's always going to be criticism, and everybody puts that on the fighter, and it's not your fault.
I thought it sucked before when I thought I won a fight and I got lost. This is worse. Honestly, this sucks. You know, I feel like, you know, it's great that I got the win money, but I 100% thought he won the fight. You know, so I'll go back and watch it. You know, maybe I won't be so critical of myself, but I thought he had the fight. You know, I feel guilty. I feel bad about it. You know, because I was in his shoes last time. You know, he's coming over from Bellator. And, you know, they match him up with Diego. He has a tough outing there, you know, altitude, everything like that. And then he gets kind of – I think he gets screwed on a decision. You know, that's super crappy. That's a really bad start 0-2, and he's really good, you know. I'll be harassing Sean Shelby, like, got to keep that guy around. He's, you know, he's really, really good.
I know you've always been really analytical when it comes back to your past fights. Is there something you could already think about what maybe wasn't working for you this fight and things you need to go back and focus on?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple things. I went a little bit lighter on strength conditioning stuff, you know. For me, the most important thing is always stay as healthy as possible, you know. So if I have something that's bothering me, you know, junior strength and conditioning is the first thing we pull back. We dial it back a little bit. And my neck was bugging me a little bit. My wrist was bugging me a little bit. So we pulled all that stuff back, and he felt a lot stronger than me tonight, you know. And I didn't think that was going to be the case. I thought I was going to be the stronger guy. So we'll definitely pick up strength and conditioning. We'll keep it, even if with injuries a little bit, we'll kind of keep that a little more important next time. Had great jiu-jitsu. I thought he was going to be kind of a one-trick pony going for a lot of leg lock stuff, but had great base, great position, great jiu-jitsu. You know, I think that because we're good about, you know, kind of breaking people down, there's been some fights where we know 100%, like, we game plan perfectly. We did not game plan perfectly for this fight. You know, he was, you know, a different animal than we thought he was going
to
be.
Did you get a chance to speak to him after the fight?
Yeah, I went and talked. You know, we were doing photos after. I got checked up by the doctor, and his wife came and grabbed me and wanted to know if I'd go talk to him. You know, I feel bad, honestly, because I know how bad, you know, it feels like losing a decision like that. You know, I told him, like, dude, I'll harass Sean Shelby. I'll make sure they're not going to, you know, let you go. You know, because it's just crappy. You know, it's crappy to come in with an 0-2 start, you know. But he's good. You know, I'm sure they'll treat it like a win.
I know a lot of times after a win, you know, guys, you know, the motivation, the momentum's going forward. I don't know if you feel like you have the momentum for the next one. And I mean, because normally we'd say, right, what's next? How soon do you want to get back in? Does this kind of shut it down for a little bit? You just kind of want to regroup?
I was going to shut it down anyways, right away. You know, like, I'm always in the gym anyways, but, like, I had a couple of, like, little stupid nagging stuff that, like, I just, because I was training at camp, I couldn't really tend to as much. So I'll definitely tend to those a little bit more, but it's a weird spot because after I fought Jim Miller the second time, I thought I won that fight. I treated that fight like a win, even though it was a loss in the scorecards. And then we come into this fight, I kind of felt like I kept a little momentum going. And then, but I feel like I lost tonight, you know, despite getting the win. So I don't know. I'm all screwed up. I guess it brought some balance, but it's just crappy. It's crappy, you know, feeling like, I feel guilty about it, honestly. It's crappy.
Did you get a chance to watch BJ's fight?
I didn't. I was doing photos. I saw the finish. You know, I'm bummed for him. You know, he shouldn't go out like that. But I don't know. I mean, it looked like it was going well. I was just getting bits and pieces of it. It looked like he was doing okay until the finish. You know, I thought he got dropped, but it seemed like he was recovering for a little bit. He got hit a bunch on the ground, but I felt like he was still in it till the very end. So I don't know. Bummed for him. He's a really, really good friend.
He was your coach on Ultimate.
He was my coach. He was the reason I went on the Ultimate Fighter. I went out to Hawaii and stayed with him, you know, for the better part of like 6 months. You know, super tight. You know, I don't talk to him all the time because I don't want to bug him, but dude, I care about that guy so much.
I know you said you want to kind of recover and take a little bit, but looking at the end of 2017, how many fights do you want to get this year? Is there, you know?
So early in the year, you know, we'll probably try to get two more. You know, probably fight like, you know, June, July, and then maybe November, December. Yeah, I would guess. You know, it depends how fights go, though. You know, if I bounce back health wise and, you know, I feel real good, you know, maybe we'll fight sooner. Maybe we'll fight more like May. And, you know, who knows? You know, it always depends how the fight goes. You know, you have a fight, you knock a guy out in the first round, first minute, you bounce right back, you do it again. You get beat up, you go a little further.
Are there names that make sense for you?
I'm in a weird spot. I'm in such a weird spot. You know what I mean? I think I always have good, exciting fights. I think I have memorable fights. But it seems like I win one or two, I lose one. I win one or two, I lose one. You know, it's like it's tough. So I'll fight whoever they want me to fight. I like kind of being that utility guy that can, you know, I can be a Fight Pass prelim, Fight Pass main event. I can open a pay-per-view. I can be, you know, co-main event tonight. So it doesn't matter. Wherever they need me, I feel like I'm duct tape. You know, wherever they need me, I'll go.
We have you on Facebook Live right now. A lot of fans, their comments about how, you know, they show a lot of respect and love you. Any words to your family?
You know, follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/JoelOzon. But, you know, I appreciate all the fans. Like, I love Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everything, YouTube. We do video blogs. We do all kinds of stuff like that. We try to be super active on social media. You know, I think it's a great way to interact with people. And I love the support, you know. I wish I could have done better tonight. I got the win, but I think I should have done better.
So there you have it, Joel Ozon. Like I said, all class. You know, you said a cool guy. I mean, it's not the first guy who won a fight that he thought he lost. I mean, you can see it sometimes just watching the body language.
Yeah.
You can see the corners and you can see the teams and you can kind of, even though we can't necessarily hear what all is going on there, you can see the reaction and you can tell when guys think they lost a fight and then all of a sudden they win. And it's easy to get on the mic. We've heard other people get on the mic and be like, well, I knew it was close and I wasn't sure. It's like, dude, I just saw you. You thought you lost that fight. You know what I mean? For Joe to step up and just be like, dude, I thought I lost. I'm telling you, that dude is as classy as it gets, and I think he deserves all the credit in the world for it. Now, Joe, it's funny, as you said, he said, I'm going to go to Sean Shelby. I'm going to make sure they don't cut held. I'm going to make sure they give him another chance. I think, first of all, that's a great gesture. But second, I think that's probably the way, not that I've talked to the matchmakers. I didn't get a chance to talk to Sean Shelby about it, but I think that's probably the way they would lean anyway, right? I mean, Marcin held, yes, he's 0-2 in the UFC right now, but he came in, fought Diego Sanchez in Mexico. Hell of a fight there. It was a lot of fun. Now he fights Joe Lozon. Comes up short in a fight that I think most people think he won. So, yes, 0-2, but 0-2 against two tough, tough dudes. And, you know, I think he was safe to get another chance anyway. So, I think we'll see a lot of Held. And to me, as weird as it is, I mean, I was impressed by Held in a loss for sure. So, excited to see him. All right, another close fight was Ben Saunders picking up a decision win over Court McGee. Now,
this is another one. If you watch the decision, if you watch his reaction, he had the look of someone that was like, I lost this fight. You know, so, and I've already heard people, even the video we pasted online, people are already just saying like he lost.
I got hit up on Twitter, but now I scored this fight for Ben Saunders. I scored round one and round two for Ben Saunders. I'm definitely excited to go back and watch it. Of course, you know, we do this immediately after we get done. This is kind of our instant reaction. I haven't had a chance to rewatch it yet. I definitely
need to
will
watch
go back
them
and
all
watch
for
it.
Like the first time, it seems.
I know you were busy back in the back all night long. Ben Saunders, I thought he won the fight, but – man, it was such an intriguing clash of styles because, you know, here's Ben Saunders, this big, tall, you know, lanky dude firing these leg kicks from distance and firing body kicks. And, you know, he was really doing a good job with his kicks. But Court, you know, it's funny because we interviewed Court earlier in the week and we talked about it off camera more than we did on camera about his injuries that he was dealing with in his last fight. And I'll be honest, I was not impressed by his last fight at all, man. I mean, I was honest with him, and I told him that, you know, the atmosphere was amazing, and it was, man. There he was fighting against Dominic Steele in Utah, which is of course where he lives, and I mean it was a huge moment for him, and it was a hard fought fight, but you know it wasn't exciting. It was a very grinding. He did what he had to do to win the fight. His family was in, you know, his kids were watching him live for the first time. I mean, it was an incredibly emotional fight, but it wasn't his best performance. You know, it was just like, oh man, he eked this one out. And then he tells us, you know, after we turn off the cameras, yeah, oh, by the way, like, I snapped my ligaments in my elbow, like, in the first round, and he was dealing with some other stuff coming in. He talked about all the injuries, and I'm like, oh my God, that kind of totally changes how I felt about your performance now. Like, I get it. Now I understand why it was such a grind for you in your last fight. And it was funny because I remember thinking, like, man, maybe I need to change my pick because I had picked Ben Saunders going in just because I thought, man, I guess Court's reached this, you know, point in his life where he's just going to be kind of flat. And I thought Court looked great tonight, man. I thought he moved well. You know, dealing with that range of Ben Saunders is not easy, and Court was just throwing big hooks, landing quite a bit. He would get inside and get out. You know, he was taking some counters in return, but I thought Court looked good tonight, man. I thought there was absolutely nothing for him to hang his head out, but I did score this fight for Ben Saunders. But exactly what you said, Kokofi, man, I saw quotes all the way. First of all, I was watching the MMA Junkie Twitter feed, and people were like, garbage decision, garbage decision, garbage decision. Somebody hit me up on Twitter and was like, did you actually score that fight for Ben Saunders? And, so a lot of outrage. This was a very close fight, and I agree. I mean, it was razor thin. I think I even put in my play-by-play at the start of round three, like, neither man can possibly feel comfortable about the score right now because you just don't know where the judges were going to go. But Ben Saunders gets the decision win.
Yeah, this is one I definitely got to go back and watch because pretty much I only caught the bits from like in the third round, and I believe it was at the point where Court, I think, had turned the momentum back into his favor, was getting on top and was doing what Court seems to do when he always kind of – when he gets into that, I'm going to wrap you up and sort of just kind of maul you and kind of lay on you and do that sort of thing. So from that perspective, I thought I had picked right when I said that McGee was going to win beforehand. And then afterwards, you know, when I was watching the decision, I'm kind of like, all right, I think I got it. I think I got it. And that's kind of the general census in the room. And when I saw Ben's face, I was like, yeah, that's not a look of a guy that is lost. In fact, somebody said that to me right then, too. It was like, yeah, that's the look of somebody that's defeated. So I'm thinking, like, okay, I'm right. And then when he got his hand raised, it was just like, well, shoot. Now I got to go back and watch this again because obviously I missed something in the other two rounds. So that's when I'm looking forward to go back and watch. And, but his honesty and his openness, and I mean, he rambled, folks. He rambled. In fact, the interview went on for about a good 20 minutes, and you could see the
which is why you guys didn't get to see.
Yeah, which is why Lizon we literally Hill. Missed the whole fight. And he had tried to, you know, he kept peeking over it a couple times, which made me want to kind of peek over and just listen to him when he was talking about the room because he was in the same room as Joe and BJ. So he was like, I had the best fucking room. He was like, I was so stoked,
and
you know.
BJ's his, like, idol.
Yeah. So he was, like, on cloud nine. So then next thing you know, he was just chatty Cathy and was just like, I think Dave Mandel from the Sure Dog got, like, into his second question. By the end of that, he was already 8.5, like, 9 minutes in. I mean, he had a lot to say. But he said the same thing sort of during the fight week. He was very, very open about a lot of the things that he had dealt with, you know, and the fan reaction, the media reaction. But he was very thankful for just all the attention and just the moment. I think he went through so much stuff that he was just kind of living in the moment, which is always awesome. And I think it's a good thing that we all try to do that more. And I think he was just really just wanted to kind of gush about it. So, but yeah, it was – I have to go back and watch it now because after watching and just hearing it afterwards and hearing how close it was, I feel like I missed out on a lot of great action tonight because we were back in the back. This new format of bringing everybody back is good because at the end of the night, it makes things a lot shorter. But for us stuck in the back, we miss a lot of the action.
You never get that break, the main card. Yeah. Well, so what we did is we edited down the audio from Ben Saunders because he did talk for 20 minutes. But the full version of it is on YouTube. So if you want to go watch the entire 20 minutes, go to YouTube, the MMA Junkie YouTube page, and you'll see it there. And you can
definitely
watch that.
It's not safe for work. This is the one guy that drops more F-bombs than me. I mean, like, and it starts right from the get-go.
What about, does he have any whatnots and what have yous?
I should have like, subliminally suggested that to him. So, Ben, you know, and, you know, like, whatnot are you doing later, whatever? I don't know. How do you subliminally plant messages to somebody? I don't know.
You know, it's funny. Before we play this real quick, you know, You're becoming like the mini Mike Bond with your stats that you like to throw out. Look at this.
I am so not close to Mike Bond. Mike probably has that shit memorized. I just look at the screen. And
I know, but look at this. If you go through the stats with Court and Ben Saunders, let's just look at the strikes, okay? Round one, Ben Saunders wins 22-21. Round two, Ben Saunders wins 24-23. And then, of course, round three was the round that Court won pretty clearly, 33-21. And, of course, he had the takedown as well. But, I mean, you're talking about one strike difference.
Yeah, that's tough.
Incredible. Incredible. All right. But, hey, you know what? Ben Saunders giving a shout-out to the MMA media, including MMA Junkie.
I thought that was very nice. The very end, you don't hear it in the thing, but after we'd stop rolling, I was like, dude, thank you very much. I was like, honestly, I didn't know if you were, like, taking a jab at us and doing whatever because I couldn't hear all the interview. I thought you were maybe, you know, taking one ass. He's like, no, I was just – you guys, thank you very much for just helping bring attention to the sport and bringing attention to me. And so he was sincere about it. I thought he was, like, you know, taking a little jab. I was like, what did we do now? You know, which happens all the time because he was – I think he was the one that early was like, you know – the fans – no. That was at the last fight. Everything just blurs.
You're talking about when Tim Means called us out.
When Tim Means went off.
You know, they're both kind of tall, wiry guys that drop an F-bomb every now and then.
Yeah. Well, Ben Saunders drops it quite a while. quite repetitively. But no, I thought it was good. And but, yeah, because my ears perked up because a lot of us were editing. And he was like, I just want to thank Sure Dog, and I just want to thank MMA Junkie. I was like, wait. What is he saying? I was like, what did we do now? You know, and everybody in the back, that's why I sent you a message. Yeah. I was like, what did he say? And he's like, yeah, he was just thinking in media. I was like, okay. And I was like, was he really thinking us?
So, but he was being sincere.
He was being sincere. So you don't hear that at the very end, but he was being very, very sincere. And so it was very, very cool.
Very cool. All right. Well, it's like I said, the full version's on MMA Junkie YouTube channel if you want, but you can hear a little bit of this edited version right here. The highlights from Killer B. Ben Saunders, who picked up the narrow decision win over Court McGee.
That was the most epic back room in of all time. Fucking me, Joe Lozano, and BJ Penn. I was like, yeah, let's fucking get photos and everything, man. And then the pressure was on. I was like, because that's what it is in the back, man. When we go back there, it's like, fuck, we're a fucking team right now. Everybody back here, we're a team. We got to get a fucking win streak going.
That's right, buddy. As a fan, how exciting is it for you to share a back room?
Oh, dude, he's my GOAT. Everyone can speak anything they want, man. He's my GOAT. He was the official fucking first reigning 55 champ, moved up to 70 and fucking beat fucking Matt Hughes. They didn't let him keep the 55 belt for whatever reason, but he was the first original fucking double fucking king. Fought me Lyoto Machida at heavyweight. I mean, give me a fucking break, man. I know that's fucking old school shit, but the reality is, man, who's going to fucking ever do that again? He's a once in an ever athlete, 100%. Super honor. And we already talked, man. I'm going to Hawaii. We're going to fucking chill. I've never been there. He's going to bring me to the Big Island and fucking show me everything, man. It's going to be great.
What did BJ say to you after your fight?
I haven't seen him yet. They didn't let me back there yet. I had to go do a fucking media, and then they brought me to you guys. So I'll see him when we get back there. Oh, man, I'm fucking rooting for him so bad, man. He's looking in great shape. Oh, he's the man. Super honor to fight with him.
Talk about your fight tonight.
Ooh, goddamn! Court McGee, man.
Did it go the way you thought it would?
I knew he was going to be super tough, man. He's got a hardcore chin, never been submitted. But that didn't stop everything in my power to try to stop him. You know, I thought I almost for sure ended it in the second. I rocked him. And then I landed a head kick that just grazed him, man. And if it was a little bit lower, you know, maybe I would have got that KO bonus or performance bonus, but it is what it is. You know, I thought I was up on the scorecards going into the third, but in my head, statistics-wise and judges-wise, you never know what's going to happen, and I didn't want that extra five on my decisions, and I didn't want the chance of losing a potential decision if it went that way. So I went into that third round thinking, fuck, it's been a year since I fought for the UFC. I need that money so bad. This is for everything, man. This is for all the money. And, you know, I felt it was going well until he got the takedown. And then once he got the takedown, we were so slippery at that point that every time I was trying to grab him and hold him and fucking get anything on him, he was just slipping out. So, you know, and then I was trying to stand up, and then he was holding me down, and then I would go back to trying to get stuff, and then I did get him into the dead orchard for a hot minute, and I did land a few elbows for a hot second, but then he was able to scramble out, and we were also right in his corner, so I could hear his corner going the entire time, giving him, you know, all the right pointers of what he needed to do to get out of it, and it was what it was, you know. I know we tried to finish strong. None of those elbows and everything really was landing clean. I was doing a really good job as far as trying to scramble and control and still try to be offensive and grab and break his posture and try to get my own offense going and not just try to lay there. But, you know, once I wasn't able to try to get control, I kept trying to switch between getting control to getting an underhook to try to standing up to then go baiting him to go back to my my guard and trying to work from there. But once again, man, we were so slippery in that third round, and it was like the last minute or so of the third round, maybe the last two, that it was really hard to get anything. And anybody that knows anything, you know, he's got endurance for days. That's his heart, and endurance are a big part of his strength. So, you know, more power to him. Both of us had nothing but respect. We know each other. I don't know if it's up there for fight of the night, but, you know, I could use the money, and him not getting his win bonus, I would love for him to get a win bonus also, or some kind of bonus also from that. So, you know, fingers crossed if that was possible. If not, you know, hopefully they just, I don't know if the new owners, if they do backyard or, you know, locker room bonuses, but hopefully they see that we literally left everything in there, and, you know, maybe we can get some more. You know, I don't like talking about my personal life and my personal business, but realistically, man, it's been a year since I fought, so this is what I do for a living, and that's a long, long time to make some money. Yeah, I fought Volkman, and yeah, I won in 17 seconds, but that wasn't a lot of money by any means. You know, in fact, it was just possibly paying the bills off that I owed from the 6 to 8 months that I didn't have a job, and then, you know, I went into this fight in debt, so... You know, I did everything I could to make a camp happen and be in as best shape and as best prepared as possible with this money and this win bonus. That's only going to allow me to get bigger and better training camp possibilities and really have that more focus on that and less stress. There's a, you know, unless you're a fighter, you don't understand the stresses that go through it. But, you know, the holidays were here and I wasn't able to really enjoy anything, man. The focus had to be on business at hand, and that was the fight. So as much as I love my friends and my family and all that, Christmas and New Year's was mediocre at best. It was, you know, it was tactics hand, man. I knew once again, of course, tough as hell. I knew what I was getting myself into. So there was really no enjoyment of leaving that focus and venturing out into enjoying life so much. It was like, this is the fight game. This is what I dedicated my life to. And above all, this is my third stint, man. This is my return, and I needed to make sure that it would. I wish I got a finish. I wish it was a lot more entertaining and as far as winning by KO or submission. But, you know, hopefully, once again, we'll have to rewatch the video. But I know we fucking scrapped like a motherfucker out there as hard as we could. So hopefully it was entertaining and we did our job.
Standing there waiting to hear that decision, you only have a look of confidence on your face. What was going through your head? What was the relief like when you heard your name at the end?
More than anything, it wasn't that I didn't think I was going to win. It was I was fucking disappointed how that third round finished. I put so much into this camp that for it to end that last 30 seconds to a minute, I didn't mind so much the takedown. It was that once the takedown happened, not being able to get anything possibly going. And then once I did get the dead orchard and I was trying to get something going, the fact that he was able to get out of that was kind of disappointing. But above all, it was more just disappointment that I went to the judges. Not that I thought I didn't win, not that I didn't think it was possibly entertaining. It was just, you know, I feel that's a disappointing. It's not the greatest victory anybody could hope for.
Hey Ben, you stated you weren't pleased with your performance out there on the post-fight interview. What things do you think you could have done differently besides obviously the finish that you were looking for?
Maybe just a little better preparation. You know what I'm saying? People don't understand the pressure that comes into this game. And when you come off a year of being in this organization, there's a lot of, this is my third stint in the UFC. I don't know how many people can say that. I don't know how many people can say that. And right now I'm 8-4, you know, like I'm not a 3-8, fighter here in the UFC. I'm 8-4 right now. So I got skills, you know, but coming back, it's like at 7-4, there's a lot of people just calling me a journeyman, man, and that hurts my feelings. You know, I'm not a bitch or anything, but I'm 20 wins, 7 losses, and 2 draws. And if you look at who I've fought, man, they're tough dudes, you know? And at the time, firstly, especially my first stint in the UFC, John Fitch was the number one contender. I took him 48 hours notice. Mike Swick, if he beat Dan Hardy, would have fought for the UFC title. Dennis Hallman beat Matt Hughes in like 30 seconds both times they fought, and fought for the lightweight title. So I'm like, and then Cote fought Anderson Silva for the title. I'm like, yo man, I fought 3 title contenders that fought for the UFC title, and I fought a guy that was 1 fight away. That's how I look at my losses. If you look at the other guys, Douglas Laney's the champ right now. You know, like, I'm not the people I'm losing to, it sucks that I lost to them, but I've learned from them, I've gotten better. But they're no slouches, man. I'm not losing to nobodies. I'm losing to people that were seriously tough dudes that all had more experience than me, essentially, at the time. And I probably was the underdog. I shouldn't have won. You know, so, like, that's what keeps me up, you know, as far as staying in the game and not fucking crying about my losses. I look at that as motivation. I look at that as, like, man, like, what I can be. Like, these guys were ahead of the game. John Fitch might be retiring right now after he just won that title. You know, that makes me super sad for him because he said it might be due to medical concerns or whatnot. But, I mean, that's a prime example, dude. That was another champion. He's still a champion. You know, these are guys that I fought and that I lost to, and I see no shame in that. No shame in those losses in any means. They made me who I am today. I bounced back from them tenfold. I've only lost 2 times in my life in a row. And it was, once again, it was to John Fitch and then Dennis Hallman. And both of those were decisions, tough fought decisions that, you know, I learned a lot from. They were both phenomenal wrestlers with great, that were black belts in jiu-jitsu. So I had to up my game tremendously coming off that. When I got let go from the UFC, Joseph was straight up honest with me. And I didn't have any fault in that. He was like, hey man, you need to work on your takedown defense. And either standing up or your aggression off your back, your jiu-jitsu. I 100% agree with him. Because I want to be world class. I would love to have been a title contender or fight for the title or won the title. And without those 2 things, I essentially couldn't have done it. You know, I wasn't bad off my back, but I wasn't world class probably at the time off my back. And I couldn't just live off the fact that I'm a long rangey striker with a great clinch. You know, I couldn't live off that. So I had to move. I had to improve. Everything has helped me learn. And look at me today, man. All the people that, all the path that all this thing took me. When I made it back to the UFC the second time, and I made history with Dumba Plot, I was like, this would have never happened. Would have probably never happened. I would have never met and trained with the people that I trained with to get where I am today. And that includes right now, beating Court McGee. You know, this guy's super tough, and who knows if that would have ever been possible of winning and beating this guy if I didn't lose the fights that I lost and things didn't play out the way they played. So, you know, I'm very happy with where I am in my career. I'm very happy with how things have worked out. I'm super happy I just won that fight. I really needed the money and it really worked out. And I'm really happy that you guys are giving me this interview and this time right now, man. I love the media. I think you guys are freaking awesome, man. You guys make this sport.
So Ben Saunders, F-bomb filled Ben Saunders, an emotional guy. He's always extremely animated. It was fun to talk to this week. Picked up a big win for him over Court McGee. It was close. Cole Coffey and I will be going back and watching that again. Tell us what you thought. Hit us up on Twitter. Let us know. What did you think? It seems like, honestly, more people than not, I thought the Court McGee one. All right, the main card started off with Sergio Pettis picking up a decision win over John Moraga. Good fight. I thought it was. I thought Moraga put on a good showing for himself, stepping in on short notice. Was close. You know, it wasn't a blowout. I actually scored all three rounds for Sergio Pettis. One judge did the same. Another judge gave Moraga round one, I believe, and then another gave him round two. So even the judges that had it 29-28 disagreed with how exactly it was scored, so what round he won. So it was a close fight, but I thought overall Sergio Pettis looked good. Might have been, you know, one of the best performances we've seen him to date. John Moraga's a legit dude, and Sergio Pettis, I just thought he executed and looked very sharp tonight, very crisp. That was a pick that I was struggling with, man, going back and forth on. Not sure if Sergio I had made the pick for Sergio Pettis in my staff picks, but felt like maybe John Moraga was going to have a little something up his sleeve. But Sergio Pettis got done. I thought overall it was a very impressive performance from him. The preliminary cards wrapped up with Dracar Close picking up a decision win over Devin Powell. I saw a lot of hate for Close on social media as the fight was unfolding, and I think it's understandable because as much as he was in control and as good of a job as he did, he was showboating quite a bit, and he was having really good success in moments, but not necessarily completely dominating the fight. I mean, he was loading up on the right hand, and Powell showed a heck of a chin because he was absorbing those blows, taking some big shots from Dracar Close. But, you know, Dracar didn't finish the fight. You know, he was – I don't know. I saw there was some raw talent in him that I saw. I was impressed by him making his UFC debut. There were things I liked about it. He was being trashed online. I wouldn't trash a guy. I thought there were some things that I really liked and I'm interested to see for the future. But, I definitely see how his little swagger and attitude might have pissed some people off. So, overall, I thought it was a decent performance, not an incredible performance, but not bad. Cole Coffey, overall, just your impression of him, you know, coming backstage, you know, did that – because I haven't gotten to see, unfortunately, his interview yet. Did that little swagger and attitude did it translate with him?
Yeah, it pretty much did. he was like, you know, pretty much coming out, you know, saying like, you know, the knockout was what he was going for, a flashy end. That's what he hopes to keep doing and stuff. So yeah, he was definitely carrying the momentum from the win back there as well. Had no doubt in his mind that, you know, he was the big winner, you know, but he was interesting because before this I had no idea really. I'll be honest. Who the hell it was?
Oh yeah,
you
man.
Know?
Don't,
I mean, but
understandable.
It's an impressive debut for sure. I mean, I think to come in there and carry the weight of, you know the featured prelim,
right?
Featured FS1 prelim, not the fight press prelim, but all these featured prelims. It's hard to keep track anymore. But that's a lot of pressure. So for him to go out there and kind of do that and still kind of have that swagger. I think it's kind of in line with some of the new breed of these young guys coming up, these little studs. But no, it was good. That's another one I want to kind of go back and see because we saw bits and pieces of it.
There were moments that he had, man. The big right hand that he was teeing off with was good. He definitely loves the foot stomp in the clinch position. It was just weird. He was having, I thought, some really good success striking, and then he would end up putting himself back into the clinch. That was kind of a weird deal there. So, you know, overall there was definitely room for improvement, but I saw him getting a lot of hate, and I was actually kind of impressed by some of the things I saw in there. Before that, Augusto Tanquinho Mendes picked up a split decision win over Frankie Sines. This ended up getting fight of the night, and deservedly so, man. This was one hell of a scrap. Man, big shots from both men. They were both wobbled on occasion, back and forth. I actually ended up scoring the fight for Frankie Sines, but no hate at all for Tanquinho Mendes. I thought he showed a lot of character in there as well, and I thought the fight was very, very close. It could have gone either way, so I had no hate on that decision, even though I scored it the other way. And I happened to look on MMADecisions.com and saw that out of all the track scores, I was kind of in the minority. Not the only one that scored it for Frankie Sines, but I was kind of in the minority. But not one that I'll say other people got wrong or this was a robbery. It was just a really, really close fight. Alexi Olenek picked up a submission win via Ezekiel choke over Victor Pesta. Awesome finish, man. I mean, obviously a choke that Olenek is comfortable with. He had scored it quite a bit earlier in his career and was able to pick it up again. Normally a choke, for those that don't know, that you would you would do with a gi. It's technically a gi maneuver. He did it with no gi, and he did it while Victor Pesta, which was in mount, which made it even more impressive. I mean, this is something you just don't see very much of. And, you know, Alexei Oleinik is not a flashy guy by any stretch of the imagination, but good Lord, he's got 51 career victories now, and you can't hate on that. And I know that Cold Coffee talked to you guys in the back and you know, a little bit of broken English or whatever, but yeah. I thought it was great how he kind of walked through the choke and just said, you know, this is something I used to do really good, and I saw that this dude had a long neck, and I could choke him out.
And it's funny, you know, it's like, oh, do you feel like you played your hand now? Now you're not going to be able to use this again for a little while. He's like, yeah, unfortunately, I don't think so. You know, which is just funny, you know. But yeah, I seemed like a very, very nice guy. I mean, and it's you know. It's always unfortunate when we have to deal with sometimes with the translators and stuff because, you know, you just want to – you feel like he wanted to kind of elaborate a lot more on it and stuff, but unfortunately with that language barrier. But, no, that's awesome. It was good stuff. And
he does seem like a nice guy. Every interaction I've ever had with him, he's very humble. You know, he doesn't – you know, even though – you know, he gets up on stage with his opponents and he barely looks at them and he, you know, barely puts his hands up and – you know, it's just, I don't know, it just seems like a nice, just kind of like blue collar going, doing his work kind of a guy. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough
funny
to communicate with him.
Yeah. And, but it's just funny to hear him say, like, you know, I know nobody, I used to do it all the time, but nobody had seen it for a while. So I thought maybe I could try this again, you know? So, you know, I think it's very, very, when guys have a nice, funny sort of candid take on something like that, on a move that most of us couldn't even wish to hope to pull off and they make it look so easy. You know, so it's kind of funny when he's just like, oh, you know, I had this in the bag of tricks, you know, and I thought, well, why not? Nobody's seen me do this for a while. Let's try it. And sure enough, got the win. So
funny stuff. The prelims on FS1 started with Tony Martin picking up a decision win over Alex White. Tony Martin, hard working man. This was a blue-collar effort as well, grinding-type work. Definitely didn't please the crowd at all times with his wrestling, his clinch. But I think what will be forever memorable about this fight was the fact that he had a malfunction with his cup early on. They had to change his cup out right there in the middle of the cage in front of everybody. Was bizarre to kind of see that happening. It was funny because when it happened right in front of me, like right in front of press row, and literally right in front of me. And he starts leaning to the ref, and he's yelling about his cup, my cup, my cup. And I thought the cup broke, which is weird because I didn't see any strikes. Like, I didn't see a groin strike or hear it. You know, normally you can hear it when things hit the cup. I didn't hear it. And they do this, you know, this whole switch out. And he walked by afterwards, and I had to ask, as weird as it is, I'm like, how did your cup even break? And he said, no, it wasn't the cup. It was the string that holds it in place. And so because that broke, it was shifting all around. But
I know you guys, it was going to slide down his leg.
You guys talked to him a little more about it backstage, right? Yeah. What, I mean, first of all, what was his attitude? Was it kind of uncomfortable talking to the guy about his groin protector?
Funny-ish thing because you know how, you know, and this is funny because, you know, we miss a lot of action back there. So I actually started off by asking him because he looked very unhappy. And there was a moment that the camera caught at the very end where he's like, you know, I promise I'll do better. You know, right. He just wasn't he wasn't happy. So I actually was starting to talk about that. I missed the whole cup thing.
Oh, you guys didn't even
None
know.
Of us back there even knew it happened.
Oh, gosh.
So he started coming up and started talking about the cup story. And we're like,
What the fuck is he talking about?
And so at the end, we're sort of patting ourselves on the back like, well, we're glad that we got that out without even seeing it happen. So I need to go back. But he actually kind of details it all. So you can catch the interview. And he does say he was worried about it because he thought it was going to slip down his leg. He thought they were going to sort of try to jerry-rig it a little bit, you know, and thought we're going to make it happen. But that's got to be just one of those odd things that as it happens, like, what do you do, you know? But, yeah, when he was first describing it, I thought that the cup had broken half as well.
Right.
Because he did sort of describe it as being broken half, but must have just been referencing that thing. But check it out. Like, that's he goes on – check out the interview. He goes in to actually talk a little bit more about it. And but, yeah, so at first we didn't even know it even happened back there. So
that's
it was a big
funny.
Surprise for us. So
that's too funny.
That's on the list of what else I need to go back and watch. I think this whole darn event – I'm just going to go back and watch
your,
from the main thing.
You got your Monday planned out for you.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, the Fight Pass prelims. The featured fight there with Nina Ansaroff picked up a submission win, third-round submission win over Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger. Nina looked fantastic, man. She looked much improved. I think this is the best fight we've seen from her. Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger, tough. I know her back from her amateur days. She fought under the Tough Enough banner, so I called a couple of her fights, and she is as tough as they come, and she was nonstop relentless here as well. But Nina looked really, really good, relentless with the submission attack, was rewarded for her efforts. And I don't know, man. It was a good performance all the way around, and, of course, it's cool to see Amanda Nunes in her corner, you know, just the connection between them two. And, of course, they're dating, and the connection between them and you know, how Amanda coaches her. And it's cool because I think, you know, they were on my side of the cage. So I was able to hear a lot of the interactions and just see physically, you know, what was going on between them. And, you know, it's not just empty advice. I mean, even though they're dating, it's not just like, you know, it's serious advice. It's direct communication. You can tell they communicate with each other very well. And this was a huge win for Nina, you know, seeking her first UFC win. It's got to be tough, man. You're seeking your first UFC win. Meanwhile, your girlfriend is the champ that just finished knocking out Ronda Rousey. But a great performance. And again, I think Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger deserves credit for being tough as they come. But
yeah,
big win for Nina.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I picked that way wrong. And a lot of it was because, you know, seeing how tough Jocelyn is, like, she's a beast. I mean, she's so super tough. And I think the time that I watched her in Invicta, I believe she won the one fight in Invicta that I saw. Maybe she lost it. But I remember seeing her heart, and, you know, that I was thinking, like, all right, she's got this. But I think it was because I had more questions about Nina than questions about, you know, Liebarger's toughness. So I thought that she was going to win. But it just seemed to me like, I think there's got to be something where your girlfriend and your training partner is the world champ. That's got to go to a lot, you know. Like, so she completely surprised me, and it seemed to me like it was a pretty dominant performance. I could see, she was very, very dominant. And,
it was.
So we got to talk with Ann, and it was great, you know, seeing, you know, Amanda off to the side, sort of just chiming in when she can. And Amanda's been quick to sort of say that, you know, she's going to be a future champ. Nina's going to be the champ.
She
goes
out of her way every time.
Yeah, every time she says something about that. You know, I think that probably every good partner in a relationship always boosts up the other partner. But she did a really good job, and Nina kind of said, you know, I had that motivation behind me pushing it and the pressure a little bit, but she used it in a positive way to kind of, like, really strive hard. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's the thing, is I'm impressed, because I have always wondered – you know, it could go either way.
Go,
you know what I'm saying?
Way.
Like, you have the pressure of, like,
yeah,
I can't measure up to what this chick is accomplishing. You know, here's my significant other. You know, obviously they're in different divisions, but, you know, look at what she's accomplishing.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't live up to that. You know, I have to have those expectations. You always talk about the expectations of, you know, like fathers and sons, or, you know, trying to live up to somebody else's name, and, you know, dating here, trying to live up to your significant other's name. It's gotta be really tough. And she definitely handled it well. In addition to talking to you, one thing I do want to say about this fight, I thought it was, and I'm still not exactly sure how I feel about it. Of course, this was a fight between two openly gay women, two lesbians,
mm-hmm.
And it never really got brought up pre-fight. And sometimes, it's not the first time that's happened. I know Jessica Andrade and Liz Carmouche was, I think, the first time that it was two openly gay female athletes that fought. And it was mentioned a little bit. But I say all that just to say, I kind of think in some ways it's cool. Like, I mean, nobody even cares. Like, whatever, man.
Yeah.
It's a couple of gay athletes fighting. Who cares?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of cool. Then I also wonder, but, like, should it be talked about more? Like, should it be, like, them trying to champion a cause or trying to show – I mean, you know, we just had, what, Meryl Streep taking shots at mixed martial arts, talking about lack of diversity, and, you know, we've had, obviously, other people take shots from many different directions along the way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I wonder, is it something that should be, like, celebrated and championed and talked about, or is it even cooler than 2017 that it's, like – nobody gives a shit. It's two people fighting. It doesn't really matter, you know, what their sexual orientation is.
Yeah, I think it's probably – I feel it's a little bit of both. I think, one, it is great to sort of embrace that and put that out there and say, you know, here we are, you know, they're gay, they're open about it, whatever. You know, it's just the sexuality, it's whatever, you know. But also in the same sense, too, like, they're also two high-level athletes. Do we need to always bring it up every time? let them just go out there, perform, let them do their thing. If anything, you know, kind of going with that, you know, when we were doing the interview back in the back with Nina, you know, there was a point, and I kind of went back and forth in my head whether I wanted not to ask, because I was still thinking like, oh, you know, this will this sound completely wrong because the context is two gay women in a relationship. But there was a point where Amanda was always sleeping with the belt. She was taking pictures sleeping with the belt. So right. I wanted to ask Nina, like, so how long did it take? Because we kept bringing
to
up
the belt out of bed.
How long did it take to get the belt out of bed? But then I didn't want to seem like the fucking dude that's asking
right.
about two lesbians that are sleeping, what their sleeping arrangement
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then I just
I
felt like
that.
It would open up a can of stupid ass worms.
Yeah,
you know?
I could see that.
So I was like, all right, I'll leave it alone. But I was like, I totally want to do it.
It is a funny question,
yeah,
right? You
because I mean? Think it was a, if it was a matter of, say Amanda. Or I'm not Amanda, but Ronda Rousey. Say Ronda Rousey had the belt,
right.
was sleeping in it, and Travis Brown. If we had Travis Brown there, I guarantee it wouldn't have been a big
right.
issue for me to
or
say.
Or asking Caraway about Misha.
Misha, yeah, Misha's
yeah.
got the belt. You know, when did she finally get the belt out of bed? We don't think about it.
You're
but,
right.
You know, something in me, and maybe it's wrong. Maybe that's my own downfall. Maybe I'm thinking too much into it. But I just kind of it kind of hit my head, you know, thinking about it. And I was like, okay, I know we've got to a point where we've moved beyond a lot of things where we can finally, like you said, just watch a fight of two athletes where we didn't have to bring it up and say, all right, here's two openly gay athletes that are fighting in the UFC, a typical male dominated, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I think we'll have that question a lot more should we ever have an openly gay male athlete.
Yes.
You know, then
yes.
the discussion will come back up, and then I think we'd have to, you know, talk about it, you know, the people that watch 100%. It will have to deal with it.
100%.
See how they react to it. But I like it. I like the fact that they just let two people go out there and fight. And if they want to talk about it, let them talk about it. We don't need to keep making a story about it. You know, I think we've dealt with it. We've talked about it. If anything, and now it's just treat it like what it is. They're two super top level fighters that were just fighting. So I love it. I think it's great.
I dig it. And by the way, I love that the shirt that the UFC put. I own the T-shirt, and I like wearing it, man. The one that came out around 200, around UFC 200, the We Are All Fighters with the rainbow colors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, I love that shirt, man.
I wonder whose eye it was for Amanda's haircut. I'm not a big fan
not
of
not a big
haircut.
Fan of the new haircut?
No. I liked it better how – like, but it maybe – I was guessing myself. I was like, what was her hair like during fight week? Maybe it's because it was always – pull back.
It's true,
because
she had
like shaded.
We didn't really see much of her. Since
yeah.
We didn't see much of Ronda. We didn't
then,
see much of her either.
And then she came out all of a sudden, and it was like in full like mullet mode. I was like, she live in like fucking Southwest Ohio now or something, you know? Like,
I guess if Mike Pyle cut his hair, somebody has to sport it, right? So Amanda picked it
somebody
up.
She picked up the mantle.
All right. Well, speaking of Amanda, Amanda did come back in the back as well, and you
yeah.
guys got a chance to speak briefly with her. And
which is awesome. I love that she could have completely blew us off and be like, I'm here for my girlfriend. This is her night. And that's happened before with other fighters when we have it. You know, they put the focus where it needs to be. But also, we haven't had a chance to really talk with her, especially comes out recently talking about she wanted to, you know, go for the winner of the featherweight title, you know, all that other great stuff. So we got a chance to talk with her about that. But I thought it was great. She was very, very open. We actually, you know, unfortunately, it was a longer interview with her. I mean, I guess rightfully so. She is the champ.
Right.
But the interview with her went longer than the one with Nina, but it was great. It was great that we had the opportunity to come back there and chat with her. So yeah, it was good.
All right. Well, I think we should. I think we should just work that in right now.
Let's just play it. Why not?
Couple of minutes with the champ, right?
Why not? Why not? Or a few minutes, or 7 minutes.
Yeah.
How difficult is it for you to be able to have to watch Nina fighting? You can't do anything about it. You just can stand outside and watch.
Yeah, it's hard for me. Like, I was like in panic. You know, I tried to control myself, but this fight, I know is the fight for Nina, you know? She have to win, you know, have a lot of pressure. And even I put pressure on her, you know, because I know she can be the champion. She will be, and I want to she do well. I know she can. I train with her every day. You know, I don't expect another thing. I expect only she win. And this is the thing. I mean, more like scared of it a little bit. If she don't show who she is, you know, this is a very sad thing for an athlete when step in that cage and don't show who they are. And I'm very happy to tonight Nina show the world, what is she capable of.
What has the last 2 weeks been like for you, you know, celebrating but also trying to get her ready for the fight?
You know, it was hard for me too. Like after that fight, how was my camp, how was all the promo for that fight killing me. Like, I have to make my brain, my body, and my spirit like ready for that moment. And it was very hard because I talked to my friends, like I watched that fight like outside. My soul was outside watching that fight. And when I back in, like it was hard for sleep. I know sleep for 5 days. Literally, I saw every day the sun come out. And I know I have to like kind of focus because Nina have the fights right in the next week. I have to be like, you know, like more like patience. And then, but it was hard for me at the same time. All the adrenaline is still in me because it was so fast. And I know it's gonna be like that, but my body ready for 5 rounds. And when everything like was so fast, my body can handle. And was like, at the end of the weekend, everything starts becoming together, you know? And I went right away to help Nina, and everything's like was fine.
You talked about what it's like watching her. Are you giving like good advice when you're coaching her, or are you just like freaking out, like screaming and kind of panicking?
No, I give good advice for sure, because we train together every day. You know, I know everything she can do, and in striking, in jiu-jitsu, also I'm a well-rounded fighter. I know everything. I'm black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and I train in judo at the same time. And striking, like, I know everything about it. I keep learning, but I know I'm not want to like help her. And for sure, I keep like everything the way we're training, you know, all the movement.
It's not tough though for you to say like, I know what I'm supposed to say, but I'm just like want to scream and like just yell like, oh, just, you know, like to kind of panic instead of staying as a coach, you know what I mean?
No, I keep like simple. Sometimes I keep saying more like things, and then she can do only one sometimes, you know. But I keep control, and everything was fine tonight. You know?
When did it set into you what you had done, you know, against Ronda? Like when did it kind of become real life that happened, and not like, you know, kind of a, you said you were kind of out of your body watching it kind of thing. When did it finally say to you like, oh yeah, that happened. That was, you know, that was something.
Yeah, right after the fifth day. You know, I sleep again, you know, I like, I be able to rest, and then I saw everything was real. I watch over and over, like, and now I accept, you know, and I will keep doing.
Amanda, you just recently said that you'd like to fight the winner of the Holly Holm Germain fight and unify the two belts.
Yeah, Conor McGregor did it, you know, why I can't. And I feel like I want a more challenge for my career, you know. I know I can be a champion in 145 too, and that's why I post my Twitter and everywhere, and I hope Dan White can give it to me the opportunity. I will show him the real champion he has.
Would you see yourself defending both belts, unlike Conor did?
I don't know, you know. I think if they give it to me the opportunity, I'm going to focus on the fight first, and then after we can talk about it. But I will want to fight the winner, Holly, against Germain. I beat Germain already. He had me. And if Holly won, whatever, I will want to fight.
What do you see in Holly's game that you think you could exploit?
I think Holly have enough trips, jiu-jitsu, to take this fight on the ground, and then maybe like one, you know, like ground pounds or things like that. But I don't think she have a chance in stand-up, but MMA is like crazy. Everything can happen. But this fight can go in either way.
So you do believe your stand-up's much superior than Holly's?
The both, yes. And also, I have experience on the ground. I can take this fight whatever I want, you know? I know how to work with a long reach and take this fight down like I did with Germany and finish the fight.
And if you do get the belt, would you want to stay at 145, or do you see yourself at 135?
I want to take the belt first and then decide with my coach. I really want the 145 belt, my next step.
Have you talked to Dana yet?
Not yet, but I know he's very busy, and tomorrow I will text him.
So if they come with you for a defense in the belt that you already have, will you take it, or are you going to be pushing for the 145 no matter what?
You know, I defend already. With the most dominated athlete on the planet, you know, 48 seconds. I think I deserve it. Like, if I ask you for my next fight, I think I deserve it. And I think the fans want to see too. Like, a female fight go to another weight class and then take the two belts. And everybody got so excited when Conor did it. I think with me, they want to be so excited too.
And if the UFC does what they did Conor, and they made him, in a sense, seem like he had to choose one of the belts, which belt would you keep?
I think 135 because having more girls, you know, the division. But I will go to 145 in my next step.
Perfect.
Thank you.
How would you compare the challenge from being Ronda Rousey and then challenging whoever wins 145? How would you compare the challenge? Do you think it will be a faster win or?
I train, you know, for whatever happened the fight. I, you know, capitalize it, but I will look for the fast because I like the bonus at the end of the day, you know, and whatever, I always look for finish the fights fast that I can. Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks, champ.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, moving on. Walt Harris picked up a knockout win over Chase Sherman, man. I thought Walt Harris definitely, you know, Walt Harris has struggled to pick up wins in the UFC. There's no doubt about that, but I thought he looked better than he ever has, man. That guy is dangerous when he's on point. And Chase Sherman's a tough guy as well, but I thought Walt Harris looked the best that he ever has in the UFC, no question about it. And then gets on the mic after and wishes his wife a happy anniversary and talks to his kids. And, I mean, just to me, nailed it from start to finish. I thought Walt Harris looked absolutely fantastic. And, you know, what contender type making performance, but I thought he put it all together tonight, man. I thought he looked good, and for a guy that's had so many losses in the UFC to look that sharp, you know, maybe he's turning a little corner there. So Joaquin Christensen picked up a win over Bojan Mihailovic. Fucking hard to say. It's not gonna say. It's hard to say. Bojan, God bless him, tough as nails, but I don't know exactly what he thought he was going to do. I don't know exactly what his strategy was, to be honest with you. So it was a fun fight, and the fact that there were a lot of strikes being thrown and he was out there showboating a bit and smiling, and his ability to take punishment was impressive. But I just don't understand exactly what the strategy was. Dude, at this level, I don't think you can just rely on your chin as a way for you to pick up victories. And the night started out with Cyril Asker picking up a TKO win over Dmitry Smolyakov. That was an impressive performance there as well from Asker. A good way the fight started off the night in fun fashion, man. A lot of finishes to get things going overall. So, Cole Coffey, I know you were slammed in the back all night long. As you said, this new format of not having a press conference means that you're basically interviewing everybody. And I know that in listening to some of the audio and watching some of the videos that you were not only just filming them, but you were executing a lot of the interviews yourself and doing a fantastic job, as you do. but overall, man, your impressions of this Sunday night fight in Arizona, good night, bad night, what was your take?
It was a good night. You know, I think speaking on the whole fight week, the shifting to a Sunday was a little weird. Just didn't feel like a typical Saturday night feel. And normally we have tomorrow to kind of, you know, kick back and relax, and it's like, shoot, the work week's already starting again. But as for the fights, I thought it was a bunch of great fights. I'm looking forward to rewatching and catching up on the ones I missed, and especially after hearing so many controversial things were happening or whatever, I really want to kind of go back and watch those and take it all in. But I had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
The back, it was fun. It's always fun working with the guys back in the back, sort of just on the ground grinding. And food was good.
Food was good, man.
Food was
short
really
ribs,
good, man. They short ribs, potatoes. And they had the. It was a smoked Gouda mashed potatoes, man. I went back for seconds. Some people went back for dessert. I went back for mashed potatoes. They were that good.
That's
and I take that away from the fight. That's what The mashed potatoes should have got a performance bonus.
Are you ready to whip out the audio that you collected from Yair Rodriguez yet? Or is that still a work in progress?
The mashed potatoes with legend. Legend.
Yeah, I don't...
Whatever. I'm still caught up in mashed potato
land. Cold coffee Spanish impression of Yair Rodriguez and the legend. for whatever reason, I think he needs to polish it up a little bit. And I've been poking fun at him all week long for the way he says legend.
Legend.
And then tonight when Yair Rodriguez is having his post-fight interview, every time he would say the word legend.
Legend.
How does it go?
Legend.
All right, Cold Coffee would punch me in the back and poke me in the back a little bit just every time he said the word, so that
he said it a lot.
I was trying to avoid cracking up, so it was good.
But no, good night. Good night of fights, man.
It was a good night of fights.
These Fox Sports cards, man, they work out, man. They work out. Those were good times, man.
It was fun. It was fun. All right, listen, it is early Monday morning, and we're nearing 3 a.m. here in Phoenix as we wrap this up. We've got a flight to catch in a couple hours. We've got to get this thing edited and put online. And as Cold Coffee said, man, the work week has already begun. We'll be back home in Las Vegas. Wednesday morning, we'll be flying out to Los Angeles. We will be on site for Bellator 170. Myself and Cold Coffee will be there for Tito Ortiz versus Chael Sonnen. Cold Coffee, I'm looking, man. This is a 17-fight card.
Is it really?
Yes.
But at least they don't.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I don't plan on seeing everybody.
No,
either.
No, you won't.
They only give a select few.
They
on
do
that
things
one.
A little bit different. They do things a little bit different. But I have talked with the fine folks at Bellator, and they're going to set us up with some one-on-one time with Tito Ortiz, with Chael Sonnen, with Paul Daly, with Brendan Ward. So we'll have some the typical fight week coverage that we do at MMA Junkie. Of course, you know, we always try to hook it up. Like we do. All right, listen, we've got some frosty beverages in the fridge that we got to finish up before
got
we check out.
Got a frosty room as well?
We got a frosty room. Just so you guys know, Cold Coffee sets his AC at 60 degrees.
It's
ridiculous.
62 right
you
now.
You could literally hang meat in here. I've got a jacket on, and I may be
you keep
breaking
rubbing
out
your
blanket.
Hands.
Yeah, I'm rubbing my hands together just to stay warm. I may use this blanket. So, all right, listen, we're going to wrap up a little bit of work. Hopefully you guys enjoyed episode number 94 and a half. Stay tuned for 95 and much, much more. All I can say is thanks for listening.